Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231. It's October 17th, and don't forget, it's Tuesday, and don't forget the exam on Wednesday the 19th, covering introductory chapter on muscles, muscles of the body, introductory chapter on nervous system, and the endocrine system. So those four chapters will be on the test. So this is what we were talking about last time. It was the introductory chapter. We're going to finish this up and move on to central nervous system today. All right, so don't forget, what are the two main divisions, structural divisions of the nervous system? You got central and peripheral nervous system. Okay, and what makes up the central nervous system? It's the brain and spinal cord. And then I wanted you to write down a couple other things underneath central nervous system. I wanted you to write down nucleus, all right, and tract. So like maybe a couple little dots right here. Nucleus and tract. So nucleus would be one, okay, and then another, I'm kind of wrecking it, and tract. All right, so central nervous system have things that are what we call a nucleus and then a tract, and we're going to talk about those. I think probably we did already. Peripheral nervous system has analogous kinds of structures, but they're called nerves and ganglia. So over here, I want to put down, let's see what happens if I hit a return right here. Something bad's going to happen. I don't know how to put it right here. All right, so put down ganglia and then nerve. So where do you find ganglia? Where do you find ganglia? In the peripheral nervous system. Where do you find nerves? Peripheral nervous system. Where do you find tracts? In the central nervous system. And where do you find a nucleus? Central nervous system. Yeah, okay. And don't forget, the peripheral nervous system that we can break down into two categories as well. And I've had a lot of questions on these. What's another name for sensory division? Is afferent. And which way are signals moving? Remember, a neuron can only transmit a nerve impulse one direction. Can't be bidirectional. Only goes one direction. So for the afferent division, signals are going from the periphery into the central nervous system. That's why it's sensory, right? And then motor, what's another name for motor? Efferent. Which way are signals going? Again, neurons can only take traffic one direction. Nerve impulses only one direction. Which way are they going to go? From the central nervous system out to the periphery. And then the two major divisions of the motor nervous system is somatic versus autonomic. What's an effector organ for the somatic motor nervous system? Okay, and a good example would be the biceps brachii, or generally speaking, you could say skeletal muscle, right? Voluntary muscle. So anytime you see the somatic in terms of this nervous system, think voluntary. But it's going to some place in the body other than deep inside a body cavity. It's going to some superficial region on your body. That's where we find skeletal muscle. We don't find skeletal muscle, except for one that I can think of, that's deep inside a body cavity. All right, and then the autonomic nervous system, sometimes we call this visceral because it's going to deep body cavities like thoracic cavity, abdominal cavity. And some effector organs for the autonomic nervous system we see down over here. Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and then one that got put onto the next page would be what? Glands. Yeah, glands right here. Okay. So that's a really good organization that you should not forget. All right, we talked about different kinds of classifications of neurons last time. And I think I have a little flash quiz for you to look at. I'm sure this is online somewhere too. So here's just a little flash quiz. And so what do you see? I don't see much. This is just a little rest station. So we're going to flip to our first slide, and our first slide is going to show us, oh, what are we looking at here? This looks like an alien from outer space. I see one big eyeball right there, but that's not really an eyeball. That's a nucleus inside the cell. All right, what kind of cell is this? You got to know the name of the cell and what it's doing. This is an oligodendrocyte, and where do you find oligodendrocytes? in the central nervous system, and their job is to wrap a myelin sheath around axons. And that speeds up the rate of a nerve impulse. All right, so oligodendrocyte, central nervous system. And then we get to take a rest, because that was a lot of work. Let's go to the next slide. What does this look like? How many kinds of cells make up nervous tissue? There are two, okay? And what are their names? You have? You've got neurons and support cells, or neurons and neuroglial cells, or neurons and neuroglia cells. Different ways of talking about it. What kind of cell is this? Is this a neuroglia or a neuron? It's a neuron. And which kind of neuron? Okay, you should know the name of this general class. And it's, yeah, you're right, a multipolar. So here are the short, highly branched dendrites. Here's the cell body. Here is one long axon. And what's the function of this kind of neuron? It's motor, that's right, or it can be an interneuron found completely within the central nervous system. Okay, but a good example would be a motor. What's another name for motor? Efferent. Yep, efferent. Good. Okay. All right, so rest station. Ah, what's this right here? Yeah, is this a neuroglia or a neuron? It's a neuroglia cell or neuroglial cell. And which kind? Astrocyte. Where do you find this one? In the brain. So this is central nervous system. And you got to know all the different functions. It's got too many to go over because this is a flash quiz, right? So I don't want to spend all period talking about it. Rest station. Ah, what's this one right here? Neuron or neuroglia? Neuroglia. And what kind is this? This is a microglia cell. Function of microglia is for immune response. It protects your brain from infection and from tumors and other kinds of things. Oh, what do we see right here? A number of oligodendrocytes. Where would you find these cells? Central nervous system. What do we call this gap between the myelin sheaths of these oligodendrocytes? That's a node of Ranvier, right? So a nerve impulse will hop down an axon from one node to the next, to the next, to the next, making it very fast, right? If it is a myelinated fiber. Okay, these are nervous system cells? Now, these really do look like aliens. These are ependymal cells. Where do you find them? Central nervous system in the brain. They line the cavities that we call ventricles. So here is a ventricle filled with cerebrospinal fluid, and then neurons will be down in this area right here. And in some places of the brain, these ependymal cells work together with blood vessels to actually produce that cerebrospinal fluid. Cerebrospinal fluid, in many respects, is very much like plasma, which is the fluid part of blood. Okay, but notice I don't see any red blood cells in here. I don't see any white blood cells. And indeed, if it's a healthy brain, you shouldn't find anything like that. But if someone does do a spinal tap, remove some of this fluid, and there is blood or white blood cells in here, oh, what is that signal? Could be a number of different things, but give me one guess. An infection of the brain, like encephalitis. And you can imagine that that's a very dangerous condition. Okay, what do we got here, neuron or neuroglia? Neuron, what kind? Okay, I see one process coming out before it bifurcates. I see these little bulges over here, so signals will go from this end to this end. What do we call the receiving part of a neuron? Dendrites, so these are the dendritic endings. These are the axonal endings over here. This is just what we call a process and a process. So this would be the peripheral process. This is the central process of a unipolar neuron. Sometimes we call it a pseudo-unipolar. So be familiar with that. And then, what is this one right here? Here are the dendrites, here's the axon terminal, and this is a bipolar neuron for special senses, like for vision and hearing and smell. Okay, so it's a special sensory neuron. Oh, I didn't go over this one. The pseudo-unipolar is also the function of this one is afferent. So this is a sensory neuron taking information from the periphery. That's why I call this the peripheral process into the central nervous system. That's why we call this the central process. All right. Oh, what do we got right here? Nice multipolar neuron with what? Schwann cells. Nice nodes of Ranvier right here. And where is this neuron located? Can you tell me where this nice multipolar neuron is located? Okay. I would be able to tell by knowing this cell right here. What's the name of this cell again? That's a Schwann cell. Where do we find Schwann cells? They're the counterpart of oligodendrocytes. You remember oligodendrocytes are in the CNS, so this axon is in the peripheral nervous system someplace because that's where we find Schwann cells. All right, so this is all good review for the exam coming up on Wednesday. What kind of neuron do we see right here? Here's the cell body. One process coming out, splitting into, this looks like a dendritic end over here. I don't see the axonal end. So this would be the peripheral process. This would be the central process. So what kind of neuron is this? Unipolar or pseudo-unipolar. And what kind of cells are right here? Schwann cells in the peripheral nervous system. And then here are some other support cells that surround the cell body of this sensory neuron. And so what are these things right here that surround the cell body? These are satellite cells, and they're support cells as well. They're nervous tissue, but they help protect this cell body of that pseudo-unipolar neuron. All right, are we going too fast? No, you're bored. Let's go faster. Okay, what kind of cell is this right here? Oligodendrocyte, found where? Central nervous system. Oh, what was that? That was a neuron, but what kind? What kind? Multipolar. Okay. What do we got right here? Astrocyte. Where? Where found? Central nervous system. And what was that? Microglia cell. Found where? Central nervous system. Indeed. Okay. Going forward, we've got what? A parade of oligodendrocytes. Found where? Central nervous system. Ooh, what was that? Those weird guys. Ependymal cells lining brain cavities called ventricles. What kind of cell was that? Unipolar. Well, it's a function of this one. It's sensory. It's bringing signals into the central nervous system. All right, ready for another one? You only got maybe one or two left. Oh, what was that? Bipolar for special senses, like vision, for instance. What we got right there? Tell me something about that slide. As a multipolar neuron, what kinds of support cells? Schwann cells. All right, so that axon is located where? Peripheral nervous system, okay? And then what was that thing? That was a unipolar neuron with Schwann cells. Once again, okay, what's the function of that pseudo-unipolar? Sensory, it's an afferent neuron. And here we are again. Okay, oligodendrocyte in central nervous system. And what does this myelin, I should have asked that question. Okay, what's the name of the chemical that this cell wraps around an axon? Myelin, forms a myelin sheath. And why does it do that? What's the advantage? Okay, when a nerve impulse comes down an axon, if it's myelinated, that nerve impulse can skip. It can move very, very fast. Right, maybe 10 or 100 times faster. So if there's a bus coming at you, the faster these axons are, the faster you can get out of the way, the faster you can react, right? So faster nerve impulse conduction is better than slow. All right, so that's a little flash quiz. I'm sure this is, I'm almost positive that it's online someplace for you, someplace, I don't know where. Could be on my website or in Blackboard or whatever. All right, so anybody have any questions regarding these different kinds of cells? We talked about the synapse last time as well. Anybody have a question about synapse or that kind of stuff? All right, what's a neurotransmitter? I tell you what is a synapse? Okay, it's the structural and functional unit of communication between cells. So a synapse is a way that cells can communicate with each other. And it really, it's between cells that are, by their nature, very electrical, are highly electrical, like muscle cells and nerve cells, or a connection between a nerve and a muscle cell. So here we see Here we see. Here we hear. My phone. Okay. All right, here we see two cells back to back. What kind of cells do these look like? These are multipolar neurons. If you said neuron, that's, you're on the right track. So you get the dendrites, and here's an axon. And here is an arrow showing the direction of a nerve impulse, which is always what? Dendrite to cell body, down an axon, down to this axon terminus. And there's a gap between these cells, which we call the synaptic cleft. So these two cells, even though they're highly electrical when they're sending signals down from dendrite to cell body, down an axon, electrical signal cannot move across the synaptic cleft or this space between the cells. All right, so in order to excite this cell over here, there has to be a chemical that is secreted by the axon terminus, and that's what we call a neurotransmitter. And you should probably know at least one name of a neurotransmitter, or a name of one neurotransmitter in this class. And acetylcholine is a really good example. So here is a synapse. So this neuron sends information as an electrical signal. It hops across the space over here as a chemical signal, and then that gets converted into an electrical signal, and away it goes right down the second neuron. This neuron right here, since it's the first one, we call this the presynaptic neuron, and the second one over here comes after this synapse, so we call that the postsynaptic neuron. All right, and these axon terminals are touching what part of the postsynaptic neuron? These dendrites. And I see one here on the cell body, so that's why we call the dendrites right here the receiving end of the neuron, and the sending end is the axon, right? Okay. So that's a synapse. So if we look at this little swelling at the end of an axon terminus, we see it right here. So here is a little bouton terminale, or terminal button, or axonal swelling. It goes by a number of different names. There are vesicles in this bouton right here that contain neurotransmitter. And what's a, for instance, what's a good name of a neurotransmitter? A very common one is acetylcholine, that's found at all neuromuscular junctions and in many places in the central nervous system as well. When a nerve impulse comes down to the very end right there, that allows a calcium ion to enter, and then that causes this vesicle to fuse with the presynaptic membrane. And whatever in this vesicle then gets what? Exocytosed, or released into the synaptic cleft. This neurotransmitter diffuses everywhere in the synaptic cleft, including to the membrane of the postsynaptic cell, where it binds to something that causes another electrical excitation on the postsynaptic cell. And that's what we call a, what do we call that thing? I had it a second ago in my mind. Okay, what the neurotransmitter binds to on the postsynaptic membrane right here is a receptor. And the shape of the receptor has to be complementary to the shape of the neurotransmitter. If they don't match up, then the neurotransmitter can't bind to the receptor. So that underscores, even at a molecular level, the structure of these compounds has to be just perfect in order for your body to work. Right? So that's a structural functional relationship, even at the molecular level. If you change the shape of the receptor but don't change the shape of the neurotransmitter, what's going to happen? You're going to lose communication between these cells. The presynaptic cell won't be able to communicate with the postsynaptic cell. Right? The shape has to, of the ligand, this little neurotransmitter, has to be complementary to the receptor. Oh, what's this mitochondrion for? Ah, because all of this process right here requires ATP, right? And this mitochondria makes all that ATP to make that happen. All right, so your notes have a pretty good synopsis of all those events that we just talked about. So this is the structural and functional unit of communication between cells. It's a synapse. This one right here, since it comes from an axon to a dendrite, sometimes we call this an axonal dendritic synapse, because it's synapsing on that dendrite right there. Okay. Let's talk about something that your book doesn't go over in great detail, but we're going to talk about it in a little bit of detail. All right, and that is that neurons, and as a matter of fact, every cell in your body is very electrical. It actually, the membrane can separate charge. Let's take a look at this slide right here. So here we have an axon on this nice multipolar neuron, but if we actually measure this cell, no matter where we measure, we're going to see that the inside of the cell has what kind of charge compared to the outside of the cell? You see a bunch of negative charges right here, and then on the outside of the cell, on the other side of the plasma membrane, it has a positive charge. What in your life has something that if you touch one part of it, it has a negative charge? If you touch another part of this little device, you have a positive charge? A battery. That's right. So every cell in your body acts like a battery. And this is the reason why, at least part of the reason why. All right. This K right here stands for a little chemical called potassium. All right. That's just a little chemical symbol for potassium. And this Na is another chemical symbol for sodium. And you could ask me after class why this isn't S and why this isn't P, but that's just the way it is. Okay? You're just going to have to memorize that. This little one right here means that these things have a little charge associated with them. These are what we call electrolytes. So these compounds have electrical properties. And because of the way the cell membrane is set up and some of the components inside the cell, when the cell is at rest, when it's not sending signals, you have high potassium on the inside of the cell. That's one thing I would like for you to memorize. And sodium, when the cell is at rest, is high outside. And when that happens, that helps create this big negative signal inside the cell and this positive signal on the outside. Now, what can you tell me about opposite charges? You just kind of know this because it's just kind of a little saying. Maybe you've taken a physics or chemistry class and maybe you have a little bit of understanding. But what about opposite charges? They attract each other, okay? Because when they attract each other and combine, then they neutralize each other. That's kind of a very stable situation. Okay, so when the cell becomes excited, there is a membrane protein that we call a channel that opens up and it allows sodium to move. Which way do you think sodium is going to move? Well, there's this negative charge on the inside. Sodium is attracted to that negative charge, so it's going to move inside the cell. But it will also move inside the cell because of diffusion. Things will diffuse if they can go from high concentration to low, and we see sodium is high outside the cell. So sodium rushes in, and sodium has a positive charge, so when a positive charge enters the cell, notice that the charge inside the cell changes. It now becomes positive. Okay? All right, that's what we call depolarization. So what we're looking at is how the electrical charge on the membrane changes. Since it's changing, we call that something an action or motion. We call this an action potential. Potential is just the voltage on the cell. All right, so the first part of an action potential is when sodium enters the cell. All right, the second part, right, when depolarization happens on this first proximal part of the axon, it will cause depolarization in this middle part. So what does that mean? What is depolarization? Depolarization is when sodium enters the cell, when sodium channels open. So now this area here will depolarize because sodium will enter, which we see in this diagram right here. All right, so this is how a nerve impulse gets propagated down an axon, by each unit depolarizing. All right, then here is the second part of an action potential. We have potassium that's at a high concentration inside the cell. Okay? And then there are some potassium channels that open. When potassium leaves, that's when the cell repolarizes, goes back to this initial condition right here. So an action potential has got two parts to it in order for it to move down an axon. The first part is called depolarization. That's due to what ion? Sodium. In which way is the sodium moving? Inside the cell. The second part of an action potential is repolarization. And what ion is responsible for repolarization? This potassium. And which way does it move across the membrane? It moves out. Okay, and then this thing can propagate itself and just zips down the axon very fast. Right? Now, if it's a myelinated axon, that means that this process can actually be sped up by maybe 100 times, can go from one node to the next, and it kind of just zips down the axon very, very quickly. Okay, so that's what I want you to know about the excitability of these axons right here. All right, so you got depolarization. Sodium enters the cell. Repolarization, that's when potassium leaves the cell. So here's a question for you. What membrane component allows sodium and potassium ions to move across the cell membrane? And this is just passively, just by diffusion. What allows sodium and potassium to move across the cell membrane? I don't have it on this diagram right here. I'd have to go back to, I think, chapter 3 and look at a large view of a membrane, a cell membrane. And remember that a very simple view of a cell membrane is just a phospholipid bilayer, just two layers of phospholipids. But a better way of thinking of a membrane is that in that phospholipid bilayer, other proteins can be embedded that have special functions, right? So if you change the structure of the membrane, you can change the function of it. So there are proteins that are closed, but when they become excited, they can open up a little channel or a tunnel that allow these ions to move across the membrane. So just a phospholipid membrane by itself is impermeable to ions. They can't move across. A channel actually has to open up to allow these ions to move. And those channels are just sensitive to voltage on the cell membrane. All right, so those are some things that you just got to memorize. Here's some other things you have to memorize. Nervous system terms, before we get to the central nervous system. We've got stuff called gray matter. We got stuff called white matter. And I want you to relate this to certain parts of a neuron and if it has any special kinds of neuroglia cells on it. Gray matter is a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites. So what does that look like? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites. I think you're familiar with it, but let me pull this up on the screen right here. Are these myelinated? Nope, not myelinated. We had a really good picture. This one. This is really good. Okay, so what part, what kind of, what's this like gold thing right here? What is this? It's a neuron, right? Here's a neuron. And here is a cross-section of the spinal cord. Here is the nerve cell body, and there's going to be dendrites coming off the nerve cell body. That little dot is the nerve cell body. And if we look in the zoomed-in region right here, do we see any support cells around these dendrites and the nerve cell body? Nope. So this is not myelinated. Whenever you have parts of a neuron that remains unmyelinated, it looks gray. Hence, this little area right here is kind of shaded in a gray color, or it should be a gray color. Maybe it looks a little something different to me. But this is what we call gray matter. And then as the axon moves away from this area, we see these Schwann cells form a myelin sheath, which kind of looks white. All right, so as this axon moves out of the spinal cord to the periphery, right, then it's going to look white, including this region right here. So gray matter is nerve cell bodies and dendrites. What do we have right here? Gray matter, a group or cluster of nerve cell bodies and dendrites. The CNS cortex is made up of gray matter. So the brain, on the very superficial part of the brain, it looks gray because it is what? It's a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Not many axons up there. That's right on the surface of the brain. Right? If we move away from the surface of the brain to someplace deep inside the brain, if there's a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites, then that part of the brain is going to look really dark or gray, and that's what we call a nucleus. Okay? And a nuclei would be a number of nucleuses in one part of the brain. These are deep inside the central nervous system. All right, and what makes up a nucleus? What kind of pieces of a neuron? the nerve cell bodies and dendrites. And it's dark colored because it doesn't have myelin on it. Okay. A ganglion, on the other hand, is the counterpart to a nucleus. What's the location of a nucleus again? It's in the central nervous system, but if we have a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system, we're going to call that a ganglion instead. It's going to have almost the exact same function, right? But a ganglion is going to be in the peripheral nervous system instead of central nervous system. Right? White matter, as compared to gray matter, is instead of nerve cell bodies and dendrites, it's going to be axons, but not any kind of axon. What kind of axon? Myelinated, so that it looks, okay, so that it looks white. Okay, so white matter is myelinated axons going someplace. And then a nerve tract is white matter that we find in the central nervous system. So in the central nervous system, there might be thousands of these axons all bundled together going someplace, and they all have a myelin sheath around them. So it's just going to be like a really big cable with a lot of wires in it with all that insulation around it, and it's going to look white. We call that a nerve tract. So where do we find nerve tracts? I tell you what are the two main divisions of the nervous system? The two main would be the CNS and PNS. Where do we find tracts? Only in the central nervous system. Now, we see that axons do move out of the central nervous system, go out into the periphery. When they're out in the periphery, we don't call it a tract, we call it a nerve. Right? So tracts are in the central nervous system, and similar kinds of tissues are going to be in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so that's just some terminology. Okay, the nerve impulse, what we were talking about, which how does it travel down an axon? One way or two ways? It only travels one way, okay? And so it's an action potential that is moving along an axon. There are two different ways an action potential can move depending on whether or not the axon is myelinated. If it's non-myelinated, then we call it continuous conduction. It's relatively slow, right? We do have some nerves in our body that are structurally like that, but they're relatively slow. Most of our axons are myelinated, like this one right here, which means that the action potential can hop from one node of Ranvier down to the next. We call that saltatory conduction. So what kind of conduction is saltatory? Is it fast or is it slow? It's fast, right? So, and it's fast because there's a myelin sheath around the axon. So continuous conduction conducts a nerve impulse at about 2 miles an hour. But if it's a myelinated axon, it can be as fast as 300 miles per hour, right? So that's huge. That's over 200 times as fast. Okay, here's a little quiz for you. Where do we find nerves? Where do we find nerves? That's the counterpart to tracts. Tracts are in the CNS. Nerves are in the peripheral nervous system. All right, and you should actually model your thinking of a nerve just like a muscle. And a whole muscle. So what's the building block of a muscle, for instance? A fascicle. Yeah, what's the building block of a fascicle? Yeah, muscle fibers or muscle cells. Well, nerves are kind of like that same thing. Oh, and here I got to bring it over here. Sorry about that. Here we have a nerve that's in the peripheral nervous system. And we can see here are some fascicles, right? And each nerve has a number of different bundles or fascicles. And if we look in these fascicles right here, we can see individual axons. Now, they have connective tissue around them, and some will even have a myelin sheath around it. So here's the axon that's surrounded by Schwann cells forming this myelin sheath. And then there is even some connective tissue that surrounds every axon, and that's really what? An individual cell. And we call that the endoneurium. If we put a bunch of these axons together, and we surround that with connective tissue, forming a fascicle, then the connective tissue that forms various fascicles is what we call the perineurium. Notice it does not say mesium, because where would you find mesium? In muscle, right? But it's a similar kind of connective tissue. And then if we put all these bundles or fascicles together, and it needs a blood supply as well to stay alive, right? So nerves contain blood vessels. Tracts never contain blood vessels. That's why there's a difference between CNS and PNS. And then we surround all of these fascicles with blood vessels. That's what we call the epineurium. So epineurium on the outside, perineurium around the fascicles, and endo around each individual cell or nerve fiber. Okay, and then this is a nerve. And are you familiar with this nerve right here? Familiar with any nerves in your body? As a matter of fact, you are, because I bet you have bonked your elbow at some point in time and hit that ulnar nerve, crushed it up against the ulna right there, and felt some electricity in your forearm or fingertips or whatever. All right, so this is the kind of thing that you just intermittently kind of crushed and depolarized all these axons, and it felt really funny. Or bad, not more than, worse than funny. All right, so that is the structure of a neuron, or a nerve. Okay, the basic organization of the nervous system is a reflex arc. So let me pull up a reflex arc over here, show you something about that. Here's a pretty good reflex arc right here. So here we have some skin, and then here we have spinal cord, and then here we have a muscle down over here. And the spinal cord has got a couple different kinds of matter. But what kind of matter is this right here, this dark stuff? It's in the central nervous system, that's gray matter. What parts of a neuron are going to be in this gray matter? It's going to be mostly, what, nerve cell bodies and dendrites, right? But for sure it's going to be what? All non-myelinated. There's no myelination in gray matter. Where do we find myelination? In white matter, which is in the periphery within the spinal cord. All right, so signals can enter and leave the spinal cord, which is what part of the nervous system? Again, it's part of the central nervous system. All right, so this is the posterior part. What's another name for a posterior? Dorsal. Here is anterior or ventral. All right, so there are two ways, at least on one side of the spinal cord, that a signal can enter or leave. And these things are called roots. So here is a root that's on the dorsal part of the spinal cord. Here's a root that's on the ventral part. So guess what we call this root right here? That's the dorsal root. And then this is the ventral root. And for a particular neuron, how does it transmit electrical impulses? Bidirectionally or just unidirectionally? Only one way. And what are the two ways? What are, sensory or afferent, and then the opposite would be motor or efferent. Okay. So let's analyze this reflex right here. A reflex, and you're going to have to modify your notes a little bit. Your book is just a little deficient in something. Here we have a pin, okay, and when that pin gets poked into the skin, what do we call that? Pain. But typically, we call that a stimulus. So that's really the first thing about a reflex arc. A reflex arc is always going to start with a stimulus, right? So that should be like number one, stimulus. And in this particular case, right, it could be pain. But it doesn't necessarily have to be pain. It could be salty, it could be light, right, it could be pressure, right, it could be various other modalities of energy, right? But, say if it was light, what does your body need in order to perceive that light? It needs a receptor, right, which is number two. So in this particular case, it's not a photoreceptor, it's a pain receptor that's measuring tissue damage. So the second thing is this receptor right here that sets up electrical activity. It allows sodium to enter the cell, causing depolarization that causes an action potential to move down this peripheral process. Now, what kind of neuron does this look like right here? I see the cell body with this single process coming out. Here's a nice pseudo-unipolar neuron. What did we say the function of a pseudo-unipolar neuron was? Sensory. And look, here's an arrow going from the periphery into the central nervous system. Does that look like an afferent neuron? Does that confirm what we had to memorize before? Yeah, that's a nice sensory or afferent neuron right there. So an action potential moves down, okay, into the dorsal root. But here we see a bulge. This bulge on this diagram shows only one nerve cell body, and I don't see any dendrites on it, but it has dendrites. Right? But in reality, there's going to be thousands or tens of thousands of nerve cell bodies right here. It is outside the spinal cord. So is this central nervous system or peripheral nervous system? That's peripheral nervous system. What do we call a part of the peripheral nervous system that has an accumulation or a collection of nerve cell bodies and dendrites? A ganglion. So this is what we call the dorsal root ganglion, because it's attached to the dorsal root right here. And the dorsal root is 100% sensory, 100% afferent. That's the only way signals can enter the spinal cord, is through this dorsal root. All right, so the third part of this reflex loop is what? This afferent neuron right here. All right, raise your hand if you don't know what afferent means. So then it enters the central nervous system, right? So here's the peripheral process in the periphery. Here's the central process, because why? It enters the central nervous system. So here's the central process. Now I see a gap between this cell and this association neuron. What do we call this gap right here? This is a synapse, right? So here's the presynaptic cell, here's the postsynaptic cell, and it's a chemical synapse. So this afferent neuron has to do, how does it excite this interneuron right here? How does the sensory neuron excite this interneuron? It releases a neurotransmitter, right, which then causes depolarization of this second cell, opens up sodium channels, and then an action potential moves down the axon of this association neuron. What's another name for association neuron? Interneuron, because it's a neuron between this sensory neuron and this motor neuron right here. Okay, so number four is this interneuron. And this is also an integration center. This interneuron can decide whether or not that information is important, right? Or if it's something that is actually important and maybe the stimulus is harming the body. If it makes a decision, if it understands that this is really a damaging stimulus right here, then what's the decision that this interneuron is going to make? Get this part of your body away from that damaging stimulus. And how do you move your body? A skeletal muscle is going to contract, right? So it finds a motor neuron, and how does this motor, here's a cell body with dendrites because it's in the gray matter of the spinal cord, right? And then how does it leave the spinal cord? What route does it take? So here's the dorsal root, here's the ventral root, so it leaves the ventral root. The ventral root is 100% motor. Okay, there are no afferent neurons that come in here. Here's the efferent neuron. What's another name for efferent neuron? A motor neuron. And this goes just one cell all the way to this skeletal muscle right here. It contracts, moves your body away from that damaging stimulus. Okay, and then number seven right here is left off the slide. Number one is really what? Stimulus. And then this is effector is going to be number six. This effector organ, it produces some kind of response, right? So number seven is going to be response. So write a number seven with response. And for skeletal muscle, what's the response? What does the skeletal muscle do? It contracts, right? And in this particular case, it will contract muscles that are close to this damaging stimulus so that you withdraw that part of your body away from it. Right, so this is a typical reflex arc. A reflex always starts with what? Number one is the stimulus, and it ends with a response over here, right? So make sure you modify your slides appropriately. Okay, so here over here is the exact list that I want you to know. Let's look at some kinds of circuits that you have in your body. So here are different ways that information is processed. We have a single multipolar neuron, but the axon undergoes many bifurcations. So it takes this action potential and it passes it around in the body. So this is what we call a diverging circuit. So for instance, if somebody pokes your arm with a pin, it's not just one muscle that contracts. Maybe it's a whole bunch of muscles that contract to move your body out of your way. Maybe it's going to contract some muscles in your legs to help move away, not just your arm. So we call that a diverging circuit right here. Converging circuit is where you have a lot of, for instance, sensory information converging on one neuron right here. Let's see, do I have an example? Okay. Well, this is just adding up. Maybe this neuron right here is going to give us some information as to whether or not we should leave the room, for instance, when there are signals that a fire is taking place. What kind of signals might be aware of if the building's on fire? You might hear the fire alarm, number one. You might see some flashing lights, number two, right? You might smell some smoke, number three. All right, and then if you see flames over here, all of these, this cell right here is going to add all that up, and what's the decision this cell is going to make? Yeah, gather your belongings in a nice calm fashion, exit through the nearest clear exit, and proceed to a safe location, right? That's how you do that. So that's the decision this neuron is going to make. Here is kind of an interesting little circuit right here. We call this a reverberation circuit or reverberating circuit, kind of like tremolo or vibrato on an instrument. So here is the first neuron, right? So it sends an action potential down the axon and then releases neurotransmitter. It excites the second cell, right? And then a collateral, or the second cell, the axon bifurcates and it goes back and it re-stimulates this first cell over here, right? Which then sends an action potential down to this postsynaptic cell, which then sends a signal back to the presynaptic cell. And this just goes around and around and around and around. And you might wonder, well, gee whiz, that seems really silly. But it's real important. Anybody think of why you might have a reverberating circuit in your body? Like for instance, controlling things that have some kind of rhythmic nature, like your heartbeat. Maybe for digestion, where you have certain peristalsis inside the digestive tract. Okay, but that's not one I had in mind. Oh, I should have pulled up a video. Okay, of some sheep that have a problem with this particular kind of circuit right here. This is important because this cell, this first presynaptic right cell right here, becomes stimulated for most of us in the morning when our alarm clocks go off. Okay, the alarm clock goes off and it wakes us up, and then this circuit right here is activated for all day long for a period of maybe 10, 12 hours. And it maintains a wakeful or conscious state. So that maintains a nice wakeful state for us. But what happens to these neurons eventually? They become fatigued, and when they fatigue, then you can fall asleep, right? So there are some pathologies with these kinds of circuits. And when we get to the central nervous system, we'll see where this is in us. Oh, and that's where I'll find that video. Okay, but there are certain sheep, when they hear a loud sound, it breaks this circuit right here, and they just fall asleep. They're standing in the field, middle of the day, just kind of munching on some grass. And if there's a loud sound, then the whole herd of sheep just kind of falls asleep. Boom. Now, I haven't seen that in people, but there is a condition when somebody does fall asleep in the middle of the day. You could be driving down the 405, or you could be listening to a lecture, or giving a lecture, and then all of a sudden fall asleep. Does anybody know what that condition's called? That's called narcolepsy, when you just fall asleep kind of inappropriately at times when you're not really tired. So it's some fault of this kind of reverberating circuit right here. All right, so different kinds of functional or structural connections of circuits produce different kinds of things. All right, some other kinds of circuits, serial processing. Right here, for instance, if you have a signal in one part of the body, it needs to get to another part. That's serial processing. Here we have parallel processing, and this is very common in our bodies. So you have one cell that's stimulated, and then you have this divergent circuit that's passing information on to various parts of your body. And one example I could think of parallel processing, for instance, maybe this is a neuron that's in your nose, and all of a sudden, maybe you smell, say, like a leather product, something made out of leather. You're in your closet and you put on a leather pair of pants or shirt or shoes or something to have a little characteristic smell. And what typically happens when you smell something like that? Anybody have a guess? Smell is a very powerful stimulator for recollection of previous events. It helps recall memories, because not only can you recognize that smell is being leather, but you might also remember where you bought that particular item of clothing. Maybe you were on vacation in Cancun with a bunch of people or something, having a fantastic time, and that particular smell just kind of conjures up all of those images of that vacation. That's due to parallel processing. And our minds really love to parallel process information. And that's why the internet is so fascinating compared to watching TV. Okay, of these two circuits right here, what is TV? Watching TV, is that more like serial processing or parallel processing? On TV, you're not in control of what you're seeing. It's just one thing after another after another. That's just serial processing. But when you're on the internet, okay, how is that? Because of hyperlinks, you can jump from one subject to another in all kinds of really interesting branching ways. And that's why people find the internet so fascinating, because our brains are wired more so that we can jump from one kind of information to another depending on our interest. Okay. Distinct regions, gray and white matter, central nervous system. Let's see. I was showing, did you see that slide? I was talking about it, but maybe you guys didn't see it. Did I have this over here? No. Serial processing versus parallel processing right here. Sorry about that. Okay, I forgot I wasn't in dual mode. What other things do I need to pick up? I think we're doing pretty good on this chapter. Let me move this over here. Okay, so here I see a cross-section of the brain. What kind of section of the brain is this right here? This is a nice transverse, sagittal, coronal. Ah, frontal or coronal, very good. Okay, so we're going to learn some of these different lobes of the brain. What kind of matter is this right here? What kind of matter, where I have the cursor hovering, anxiously awaiting your answer? This is white matter. Okay, and then over here we have gray matter. And what do we call the superficial part of every organ? The cortex, right? So this is cortical gray matter, and then there is white matter deep inside the brain. All right, but sometimes deep inside the brain, I see some more gray matter right here, and right here, and right here. What do we call gray matter deep inside the central nervous system? This is a nucleus. Nerve cell bodies and dendrites. All right? And what makes up white matter in the central nervous system? These are myelinated axons going someplace. So these are all tracts. So these are all tracts, cortical gray matter, and these nuclei right here made out of gray matter, nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Okay? All right, including the spinal cord. So here I have an axon and I see it going through white matter. What do we call this? Let's just say there's 10,000 axons moving right through here. What do we call that? It's white matter in the central nervous system. And in this case, it's carrying signals down. But what's a general name for these axons right here? This would be an example of a tract, okay? So myelinated axons going someplace in the central nervous system is a tract. And this gray matter right here, or this nucleus, what do we have? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Can you see this little nerve cell body right here? Okay. So, and indeed, this is the thalamus. We're going to look at that next time. And then in the spinal cord, here are tracts. Here's an ascending tract. There's a descending tract that's going to be in the white matter. And then nerve cell bodies and dendrites are going to be in the gray matter inside the spinal cord. What else did we see before? How do signals enter the spinal cord? Via this posterior root, but more commonly we call this the dorsal root. Signals leave the ventral root. And these are, remember, the afferent neurons are what we call pseudo-unipolar neurons. Here's a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system. What do we call a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system? A ganglion. What do we call a group of nerve cell bodies in the central nervous system? Like what I see here or here. That's a nucleus. Same kind of gizmos, but two different locations. Central nervous system versus peripheral nervous system right here. So for instance, this could be another nice example of a reflex and a nice spinal cord reflex where you have some damaging stimulus that comes in this afferent neuron, excites this interneuron, which then immediately sends a signal out the efferent neuron to contract this somatic muscle right here, skeletal muscle. It's going to move your body away from this damaging stimulus. But what else does this interneuron do? If anybody poked you with a pin, would you recognize that? Would you feel that? Yeah, you would feel it, but even after this muscle contracts, because this interneuron then sends signals to the opposite side of the spinal cord, which then arise through the spinal cord. So what kind of tract is this that's going up to the brain? Is this a motor or sensory tract? This is sensory because it's moving away from the periphery. It stops here in the thalamus. We'll talk about that in the next chapter. Then it goes to the cerebral cortex for your perception of whatever that stimulus is. So that's where you perceive reality, is in the cortex, the cerebral cortex. Okay, and then the cerebral cortex can even make a decision on what to do with that information, like, I don't know, like what? Like punch whoever poked you with a pin in the eye and give them a black eye or something, right? So that's a decision the cerebral cortex would make, not the spinal cord. Spinal cord just protects your body. Okay. So what's the first thing that happens in this reflex arc right here? The stimulus, right? And what is the very last thing? The response, namely contraction of the skeletal muscle. All right, so that's some things for the test for next time. Oh, one last thing, disorders of the nervous system. All right, in the normal nervous system, many, many axons, like we have right here, many axons are myelinated. Okay, so what's the advantage of having a myelinated axon? It's fast, right? And so you should know some kinds of cells that form myelination, certainly know the name of that chemical. What are two cells, the names of two cells that make a myelin sheath? Schwann cells that are found where? In the peripheral nervous system and oligodendrocytes, which look totally different than this right here, in the central nervous system. They speed up the rate of an action potential up to 300 miles an hour, right? So they're a lot faster. What kind of conduction is that? What kind of nerve impulse propagation is that if it's through a myelinated sheath like this? It's called saltatory, right? If it's non-myelinated, it's called continuous, and it's slow, right? Okay. Well, in the brain, we have oligodendrocytes, but every once in a while, okay, people lose myelinated sheaths in the brain due to oligodendrocytes, right? So the axons become very slow in transmitting nerve impulses, and so signals aren't processed properly, right? So maybe there's one important integration center that is waiting for information, but it's not getting information because the axons are no longer myelinated, and the person's motor activity becomes all disrupted. And maybe some of their cognitive ability becomes impaired as well. Right? And if it's due to degeneration of myelin sheaths around axons, we call that multiple sclerosis. So instead of making nice myelin sheaths, these things become plaques inside the brain. And sometimes we think that might be due to an autoimmune disease where a person's own immune system looks at these oligodendrocytes in the central nervous system and thinks that they're cells from outside the body, and the person's own immune system destroys the oligodendrocytes, right, producing the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. There's another hypothesis as well, and that is we think that maybe it's even an infectious process where somebody got a viral infection, probably not bacterial infection, but some kind of infection that is now damaging those oligodendrocytes in the central nervous system, providing the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. Right? And multiple sclerosis is characterized by periods of relapse, where somebody is under the influence of the disease process, and remissions, and it's the job of of treatment to what? Extend the period of remissions and reduce the amount of time that somebody's in an active form of MS. Right? So some medications are getting pretty good. You're not going to be exactly normal, but you can still live a pretty normal life under most circumstances. Okay, so that kind of relates a really prevalent disease process with the myelin sheath that we've been talking about right here. Okay, anything else in this chapter? Somebody want to ask a question about? Doing pretty good? So that's it. That's the last material for the test. All right, now this, we talked about depolarization and repolarization. It's a little abstract, but just remember, where is sodium at a high concentration? Outside. Where is potassium at a high concentration? Inside. And action potential is when these ions move across the membrane. Right, what's the first part of an action potential? It's depolarization. What happens during depolarization? Sodium enters the cell. What's the second part of an action potential? Repolarization. Here's repolarization. What happens during repolarization? When potassium leaves the cell right here. All right, so that's pretty important to know something about that kind of stuff. Yes, questions? All right, listen, here's a good question for you. Good question.
Do we have to know about axo-axonic and axo-somatic?
Oh, yeah, I think, is that in your notes anywhere?
It's in the study guide.
Let me see what kind of picture I have for different kinds of synapses. Gosh, I don't see a slide. Okay, so I'll just go over it. Where is the synapse? I was actually looking for that a little bit earlier. All right, so what's a synapse again? Let's talk about a synapse. What the heck is a synapse? What's a synapse? It's a structural and functional unit of communication between cells, right? Okay, so here is a synapse. Even more importantly, here's, make sure you know this level of the synapse, make sure you know synaptic vesicles, and you've got receptors down here in the postsynaptic membrane. And, oh, you don't see it, sorry. Let me pull it over here. Okay, so here's a nice zoomed in region of a synapse. You see the synaptic vesicles, of course, mitochondria. Right, and then receptors in the postsynaptic membrane that are going to bind these neurotransmitters right here. Okay, on this particular slide, I see an axon terminus, this little swelling, this little Bouton terminale or terminal button. It's synapsing on a dendrite. So that's what we call an axonal dendritic synapse, since it's synapsing on a dendrite. Every once in a while, axonal ending will synapse on the cell body of the postsynaptic cell. Right? It's not shown on this illustration, but it's going to synapse on the cell body. That's what we call, instead of an axodendritic synapse, it's going to be an axosomatic synapse because it's on the cell body. Right? So that's the second kind. If we draw the Bouton terminale over here, axosomatic. Right? It can also synapse on an axon, maybe this initial part of an axon. That would be an axo-axonic synapse, right? If it's going to synapse on an axon. So axodendritic on a dendrite, axosomatic on the cell body, axo-axonic if it's on an axon. And maybe the book moved it over to a different location. Okay, well, here's a nice multipolar neuron. This is, again, a review. The two functions of a multipolar neuron, they can be, what, an interneuron, or they can be a nice neuron that's taking signals to this muscle. What root does it leave? What root? It's leaving the ventral root, so this is a nice motor neuron. What's another name for motor neuron? It's an efferent neuron right here, so that's a nice multipolar neuron. Here we have, what kind of neuron is this right here? Bipolar, like for special senses, like in the eyes. and the nose and the ear, nice bipolar neuron. And then here's the last kind. This is just a typical, unipolar, pseudo-unipolar, or an afferent neuron. So this is what we call the peripheral process because it's in the periphery. Here is the central process because it goes where? Into the central nervous system via the dorsal root. What do you call this bulge right here that contains all these cell bodies? That's the dorsal root ganglia. Okay. Now, if you have a bunch of nerve cell bodies and dendrites in the brain someplace, what do we call that? Is that a ganglion? No, that's called a nucleus then. All right, so here's the receiving part of the neuron. Then here is the sending part over here. The sending part can release neurotransmitter and stimulate postsynaptic cells. Okay, any other questions? Any other questions? All right, sign in sheet was going around somewhere. So it's going to take a week before we can get to central nervous system. But that's okay, I can go fast next time. All right, don't forget your exam on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me turn on my microphones off.